Mondays after an NFL week, we'll recap it all with Damian Woody. I have some thoughts on the biggest games as well. I'll also recap all the college football games that mattered, what it might mean for the Big 12 with Kansas State winning at Oklahoma. That was awesome. Get Clemson in there as well. And a look at the Power 5 conferences and how they did against each other in the other Power 5 matchups. So their non-conference Power 5 stuff, not a totally surprising conclusion. And life advice, including bartending stories again. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Arby's. I remember my first visit to Arby's. I went with my grandfather, fresh out of WWII. I reached for his hand. He declined my grasp. I was worried about the options. I said, I know they dominate the roast beef world, but is there going to be anything for me? And here's the thing. There is. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Sad news in the NFL. You had to watch last night's game, is the first sad part, between Denver and San Francisco. 17 total punts. Russell Wilson afterwards. Now I watched the post-game interviews. He called it an amazing game. And no Pro Bowl. I am looking forward to somebody writing in 3 years, why did we get rid of the Pro Bowl again? Because it sucks. It's unwatchable. And last night's Sunday night game was a little unwatchable, although everybody complained and kept watching it because I guess there's nothing else to do. I still think last night's game was better than the Pro Bowl. But let's get to the good stuff, because the headliner out of this one is Miami and Buffalo. What Miami did in winning that game at home against the Bills does not happen. All right, I'm going to get to a statistical number here that will prove it. Miami, whoever won that game yesterday, I was going to be thoroughly impressed with, because it was an absolute battle. On the Bills' side, for all the things that were going wrong with them, they roll into Miami without their secondary. Their offensive line is falling apart. Conditioning was a serious issue for Buffalo. They did not handle the Miami Heat as well as Miami did, which is something you would expect. Stephon Diggs coming in and out of the game a bunch of times there at the end. He just couldn't go because the offense was on the field for over 40 minutes of the game. You also have the fumble where it gives Miami a six-yard touchdown drive. So you're like, wait, this is a game? Like, it feels like Buffalo's been the better football team. Going into it, I thought Buffalo was better. Coming out of it, yeah, I still think Buffalo's better. Not worried about it. But I think it's such an impressive win for Miami, because on that other side is it's this goal line stand and all the things that have started to go wrong for Miami here. Tua gets knocked out, comes back in. So Miami's got their own list. We'll get to those. The punt into the butt of the punter's teammate, which is, you know, everybody's all over that one now too. That part of it, which is weird because the announcer, they're up, Miami's up four at that point. The announcer's like, I don't know, just take the safety. And you're like, what are you talking about? So now that you're only up two, a game-winning field goal is in play, where if you punt this out, they still have to go for a game-winning touchdown, which is something they just weren't able to do. And as we said, the number of plays that Buffalo was running in this game and some of their own, what was it, third and 25, and they got that back in two plays. Miami's defense is out there for 40-plus minutes. They can't get Buffalo off the field, although they somewhat contained them when they needed to, better than a lot of teams around the NFL have for the last couple of years. So you have all of these things combined, and they make the goal line stand. I don't know if Allen really, I mean, he short-armed it to the guy to the right. They said on the broadcast that it was a game-winning touchdown, and Allen missed it. I don't know if it was that open that it was guaranteed that he was going to get it unless the corner is going to break. I don't think we give corners in real time enough credit for how great their closing speed is. So when we see replays, people just look way more open, even more so on screen grabs that do people try to do to prove some points. But then at the end, too, we also saw Ken Dorsey, the OC for the Bills, losing his shit. And I think it's because he thought McKenzie had a better chance to get out of bounds, which I thought live while I was watching it, because Buffalo screwed up the ends of halves there. So Buffalo's thinking they had all these things go wrong and they should have won. And Miami's thinking, well, we had our own issues in this game and we won. And I think that's where you look at this for Miami going, hey, 3-0 in the division. It's a huge win for them, standings-wise, whatever ends up happening throughout all this. I'm not going to do Tua up and down every single week. But the reason this is so crazy for Miami is they ran 39 plays on offense, and including the Waddle hit by Tua that was incredible. Biggest play of the game for them, likely on offense. There's only been three times another team has run 39 plays on offense or less and won a football game since 1940. 4-0. So what Miami did yesterday does not happen, and they deserve credit for that. Green Bay-Tampa was the other kind of headliner with this. It wasn't the most exciting game. Green Bay felt like the superior team. It feels like week one against Minnesota where they just let Jefferson run wild. That feels like months ago already. I think Green Bay's going to be good. I think it's one of the great things about somebody like Rodgers or even this case Brady, although it wasn't the case for Brady yesterday, but when you have somebody that's that good at quarterback, and this kind of gets back to the tier stuff we always discuss, and that when you have somebody that's that good, he finds a way to figure out the things around him, and he adjusts and gets everybody on the same page. And Lazard, the wide receiver, that throw to the right side where Rodgers is even impressed with himself, like you can tell from Rodgers and his body language when he's like, man, I can't believe I made that throw, which I think is actually kind of entertaining. Maddening if you're going up against it. But that was a huge throw, so it looks like the receivers are coming along, the running game. They got Bakhtiari's back in the game. On the other side for Tampa, they just haven't really put together this offense. Yesterday, I think it's because the receivers were out for the Bucs. No Mike Evans suspension, no Chris Godwin, Julio Jones, who fell down on a catch earlier this season. And it wasn't like he got crunched. He just fell down after a catch, like a diving catch, and looked like he was bummed out, kind of going, man. And that's what you sign up for when you have Julio Jones. They're 2-for-11 on third downs yesterday, and yet they're still a 2-point conversion, which was defended beautifully by Green Bay. Throw out to the right, pass breakup underneath. The receiver was covered anyway. Brady went to the receiver after being like, do you think you had a chance? It was like, nope. And there you go. One of those classic NFL games. You're like, how does this team still have a chance to be in a 2-point conversion? Doesn't go their way. Green Bay's now 2-1. And Tampa has an offense that, with the receivers out like that yesterday, I'm not going to now start saying, well, Tampa's offense is a mess. Although Brady has the lowest QBR 3 games in of any season, which is still unfair. Since they started keeping track of the stat. So there you go. And by the way, I think they're on their third left tackle, which transitions perfectly into being aware about injuries we're not always aware about, which is kind of the hidden secret of what happens with this league or why spreads sometimes don't make a ton of sense. Because we, and I include myself in this, certainly, we spend so much time on the quarterbacks and then like a couple of receivers. I don't think we care about running backs all that much, but there can be 3 to 4 players missing that are super important, unless you're really locked into the gambling part of this or you cover that team. Granted, if it's your favorite team, it makes sense, but you're not keeping track of the cornerback depth for all 32 teams. And that's what can get lost in a lot of this stuff, because like Buffalo missing a bunch of their guys in the secondary, the Rams were missing 3 corners and a starting safety. So you're wondering, okay, can Arizona do something here? And the answer is no. Arizona's first quarters are a disaster this season. So far this year, they have 0 points in the first quarter. That is last. And they've allowed 31 points in the first quarter. That is last. Not great, Bob. By the way, saw that guy again in Manhattan Beach. Didn't say hi. Kyler, speaking of receivers, still no Hopkins. Rondale Moore out again. AJ Green left the game, kind of in the Julio Jones class of like, it's cool you signed the guy with the name and the resume. Can you really expect a ton from him? They still have Hollywood Brown, who will make some plays for you. And Dortch, the second-year guy, the little guy, I actually kind of like him too. But this offense is backyard football every fucking dropback. And I think it's just, it's unsustainable to me. They are 29th on third downs. They're converting 28% of their third downs. Now, they are terrific on fourth downs. They're 10 of 14, which is an absurd number, 71%. Not sustainable. Kyler's number 2 in pass attempts at 141. behind only Joe Flacco. I'm sure the Jets were like, hey, you know what we should do about a month into the season? Have Flacco throw it more than any other quarterback in the entire NFL. And that's what we're going to do. Now, granted, when you're down all the time, that's what you do have to do. I'm very worried about Arizona. And now the Rams, who had a week one blasting by Buffalo, they sit at 2-1, and you're feeling a little bit better about them, even if their offense isn't exactly clicking, because I still think their defense week to week is still something you feel like is an advantage. One of the other biggest headlines, Jacksonville on everyone's radar now. And this is good, because I feel like Jacksonville, they're never in prime time. You know, here you are with Trevor Lawrence, a number one pick who wasn't just the, oh, that guy went number one. Like, this was supposed to be kind of one of those Andrew Luck, like, this is the guy you want to get number one. Even if, you know, we've talked with Dilfer about some of the concerns about if it were to go poorly, maybe these are the tendencies that he has. Last year, he didn't see the field. It was very weird. Some of the red zone stuff, you know, maybe not always red zone, but close enough game situation like, hey, at the very least, don't turn it over because a field goal works for us in this spot. And it was just a disaster. 12 touchdowns, 17 picks, 59% completion rate. This year, taking care of the football. And on top of that, his completion percentage is 69% through this point. Let's look at the offense also. They're seventh in points per game. They were last season. A jump from 15 points per game to 28 points per game through three games. Their third down conversion, they're 11th in the NFL. They were 28th on offense last season, and they beat a Chargers team, the talented Chargers, who are now 1-2. And the reason we bring up talented Chargers, well, it's tough to be talented when the guys aren't playing. They lost in this game Bosa, Murray, their center Lindsey, who's one of the best, their left tackle Slater, who's one of the best. We already know Keenan Allen was out. They lost another receiver late. And it looked like Brandon Staley, their head coach, was determined to lose another one of their potential all-time Pro Bowlers in Justin Herbert. I am not a why is this guy in here when it's the quarterback tweeter, because I think that's what quarterbacks do. They keep playing. And when we give them credit for continuing to play when clearly hurt, the quarterbacks are going to want to keep playing when they're hurt so that they can get that credit. Because we always talk about what that means in the locker room. We hear it from teammates, guys that do this for real, not just us talking about it, that will compliment the quarterback who stayed out there and kept battling over and over and over again. So I think there are times we saw it even when it happened against the Chiefs, when it was clear he was hurt, and then it looked like they still might win that football game, right? Because he was going to get all this credit for battling through an injury, because that's the standard the quarterbacks are held to. So I don't blame quarterbacks for continuing to want to do it, because we also kind of like, if we don't do it publicly, we sort of secretly crush them and ask questions. This made no fucking sense whatsoever. Jacksonville's up 38-10. We know Denver wasn't up 38-10. Jacksonville's up 38-10 with under 5 minutes to go, and Herbert runs out there for another series. Makes no sense. Why haven't you talked about Philly yet, Russillo? Let's do a slight dipping of the toe into Philadelphia, because now it looks like in some places they're the favorites. I know Jason Garrett, who's new at television, I can tell he's kind of just like, let me say some shit. He called the Eagles the best team in the NFL. I think that's a little lofty at this point. We knew the NFC East, that division, the way it lined up with their other divisions, had the weakest strength of schedule. And the Eagles are 3-0 with wins against Detroit, Minnesota, Washington. Detroit's I don't want to say good, but that's a competitive football team. That's that conference rival, and they're good at home, and you know they're different now. They are different. And St. Brown's a stud. I know he got dinged up a little yesterday, and they get Jameson Williams at some point too from Alabama. I don't know if that's going to be this season, but the point is Detroit is not just some. It's not Detroit of the past. Minnesota's kind of hit or miss. They pulled it out yesterday. Washington's awful. They sacked Wentz nine times yesterday. So Hurts, through 3 weeks, his yards per attempt and his EPA, I'm using this from Mike Sando's athletic piece every Monday, those are the best numbers for an Eagles quarterback through 3 weeks of a season in 22 years. Continuing on that piece from the Athletic, the model they use is the Eagles will be favored now against every opponent the rest of the way. And if you look at the resume, or I shouldn't say resume, let's say the roster of the opposing quarterbacks the Eagles are going to play the rest of the season, this team is going to win a lot of games. I don't know if that makes them the best. I don't know if it makes them the favorites to come out of the NFC. But the Hurts part of this is changing what you think they're possible of, as opposed to, I think, other times where a team who you're just totally unsure of what the quarterback situation is, and they have a nice record, and maybe it was an easy first month. So there you go. I know people want Bill Belichick and Tom Brady legacy rankings. We need more data. We need more data. It'd be too soon at this point. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it had been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. One of ESPN's best NFL voices, Damian Woody, hanging out with us on another Monday. I was thinking about you, man. I was thinking about an AFC East battle early in Miami. All those offensive linemen, like everybody just felt bad for how tired and sweaty and hot dudes were that they didn't even really have to call a timeout for injury. I don't think they just let them hang out and rest. What's the worst situation you've ever been in conditioning wise where you're like, I am so tired. If I could quit football right now and get away with it, I would.
I would probably have to say, like Coach Belichick's first training camp. You know, that was my second year in the league. And I just remember he came in and he was like, listen, don't ask for a break because there will be no breaks. Put your head down and go to work. And when I saw that, I'm like, holy smokes. Like, we're about to be in trouble. And literally we had like 3 weeks straight of two-a-days. Guys were dropping like flies, retiring. And I literally questioned like, do I really want to play football from here on out? Like, seriously, do I really, is the money really that good where I want to play football? It was crazy.
How bad do those Miami games get like that? Because I like my whole headline off the beginning was whoever won, I was going to be really impressed. The defense is out there forever for the Dolphins and all the weird statistical stuff. But how bad are those games? Because you've been in a bunch.
Yeah, they're terrible because there's no way of acclimating to that humidity down in Miami. It's September. And, you know, for the longest, we couldn't win down there. Like when I played with the Patriots, you saw it, Ryan, firsthand. We could not win down in Miami in September forever. And then we finally, like, cracked the code. I think, like, my last year or whatever it was. But they do so many tricks and stuff. They play with the air conditioning. All those type of mind games where you just literally get sucked in with the humidity. It's awful. I would rather play in the cold than the extreme heat because, man, it's awful. It's awful playing down at this time of year.
Okay, let's talk about the game then because I alluded to it. It was a really weird game. It's almost a statistical aberration considering yeah. Miami wasn't out there that much offensively. I give them all the credit in the world for that defense still finding a way to fight. You're out there for 41 minutes, man. Fuck that. What did you make of the game? Was there anything that you took from that game where it makes you feel a little different about the matchup or those teams in the division?
Well, I mean, listen, the only thing I think you can say is like Miami found a way to win.
Yeah.
Good teams find a way to win a game. But if you just look at if you look at the statistics, you would say no way Buffalo lost that game. Absolutely no way. They ran 90 plays. 90 plays for anyone out there, it's like a game and a half. 90 plays in a game, and they lost. And the one thing I will say when you run 90 plays, that tells me you didn't have a lot of explosive plays. Like, they were making you earn every yard while you were out there. So, kudos to Miami. I think it was like 90 plays to 39 plays that the Miami Dolphins ran, something crazy like that. But I will have to say, man, Buffalo gave that game away. They had some plays, opportunities where they could have easily scored. They didn't capitalize on it, but man, that's one of the craziest games I've seen in quite some time.
Tampa loses at home to Green Bay. Are you now no longer worried about Green Bay after the Minnesota loss?
Well, I was never really worried about Green Bay. I'm not worried about Tampa either. You know, like Tampa has so many guys out. I'm surprised that the game was that close, to be honest with you. I mean, kudos to Tampa's defense, you know, for keeping that game close, considering all the weapons that were out for Tampa Bay on offense. But honestly, I'm not worried about either one of those teams. I mean, they got two of the GOATs at quarterback. Both defenses are really good. They're missing players. They got injuries that they're still coming back from. I just think with both of those teams, it's just more about, you know, just holding the fort down until we get fully healthy. Once those teams become fully healthy, watch out. We could see a rematch to those teams in the postseason.
So the reason I set that up that way, and I'm glad you hit on kind of both teams, because the Tampa receiver part of it is very real. Like, you don't expect that to happen again. But Philadelphia gets off this incredible start. Hurts looks like a different guy. The defense was just dominant yesterday against a Washington team that, you know, looks like they may be heading towards being one of the worst teams in the league. But having said all these, there's a push now for Philly being the best team in the NFC. Where do you look at Philly in comparison to the other teams that were probably a little bit more prepared to think that they could win the NFC?
Philly is the best team in the NFC right now.
So you'd pick them against anyone. You pick them against anyone in the playoffs.
Listen, the season is early. Right now, Philly is the best team in the NFC. They are extremely deep. They're very good on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Offensive, defensive line, they might be the best units in the league. Jalen Hurts showed you yesterday, like, I can beat you from the pocket. He was phenomenal from the pocket yesterday against the Commanders. Because they didn't really run the ball all that great. And defensively, they just swarmed. They swarmed the Commanders yesterday. So, right now, Philly is the best team in the NFC, in my opinion.
Okay. Would you rather have their receivers over anyone else in the NFL? I'm putting you on the spot, which I didn't mean to do.
Oh, man. I think I would take a healthy Tampa receiving core over theirs. But man, Philly is good. Like, they're good in all the right spots. Like, if you wanna go deep in the postseason, you gotta be good in the trenches. They're probably the best in the trenches. They got good skill position players at wide receiver and tight end. Good quarterback is getting better and better. Philly is they're a complete team. It just depends on Jalen Hurts just continuing to get better, like he's been showing. If he continues to do that, they're going to be a tough out.
Yeah, what has to happen then if they're going to win the NFC, and we're talking about like a Super Bowl team, then there's going to be a couple. It doesn't matter what the schedule. There's going to be some screwed up game. Same reason why we saw the Chiefs lose to the Colts. It happens in this league. So Philly, as I mentioned in the open, is projected potentially be favored against every other team they play the rest of the way. And like I said, we'll see what happens in the Green Bay matchup. But there'll have to be a few games where Jalen Hurts, when the defense isn't working, there's a couple injuries, one of the receivers out, where he does it on his own to carry the team. And that's not moving the goalposts. It's just simply like, wait, okay, now if we actually think you're this good of a team and you'd beat every other NFC team, you'd beat Green Bay in the playoffs, you'd beat Tampa in the playoffs, you know, the Rams. Are you off the Rams a little bit at this point? Or are you just,
no,
whatever?
No, I'm not off the Rams. I think the Rams is just kind of lurking in the weeds right now. Like, I'm never going to discount the Rams because they're too well coached. They got a really good roster, you know, really good team. I think the Rams are just kind of, I don't know. People just aren't talking about them right now, but they're going to be in it right in the end because, again, they got a really good quarterback and they got a really good coach.
Are the Patriots the most boring team in the NFL?
I would say yes. They are the most nondescript team in the NFL right now. Like they don't.
Houston.
Have, they don't
Houston
have
might
guy.
Be more. Houston might be the answer. But go ahead. I asked you and then interrupted you after you said yes. So I don't want to screw you up. So keep going.
They don't have a guy that scares you. Name one guy on the Patriots roster that you like. Okay, we got a game plan for him. Like he's a monster. Who's that guy?
One guy, like I've been impressed with Devontae Parker here, but I wouldn't say that he's somebody that is keeping everybody else up at night for the week.
But you know what? He went against the Ravens secondary. Ravens secondary has been awful for like 20 games now. 20 games in a row. Their secondary has been god awful. So he, you know, Devontae Parker went off against Baltimore yesterday. This is not Baltimore's, you know, this is not your Ravens father's defense. This is a defense that's not scaring anybody, but getting back to the Patriots, they're not scaring anybody. Their personnel is not scaring anybody. And then add in on top of that, this whole Mac Jones ankle injury, we don't know how long he's going to be out. Where does that lead the Patriots?
Yeah, the reason I asked that question, because I thought it yesterday as I was watching that game, and I think Mac's just okay. The interceptions he made, like if you're going to be kind of the game manager type and we're going to run the football, Cole Strange, that kid they drafted is a monster. He's unbelievable.
He's good.
He's really good. So we know the personnel stuff has been an issue now for multiple years and multiple drafts. And then this is what happens. And then they went out to spend a ton of money to make up for poor drafts. And I wouldn't say, although I really like Judon a lot, you know, I like some of the stuff they do with their D tackles. It looked like they were going to try to go into this power running thing with a complimentary Mac Jones part of it. Then Mac has these awful interceptions the second half. And I'm just like, okay, so to your point, like, is there somebody you'd watch every week? Be like, hey, actually, like when Khalil Mack's on a bad team, I'd be like, I can still watch Khalil Mack here for a few series because this is so much fun.
Right.
There isn't that person, and yet they don't have the young quarterback who's like the top draft pick. I guess people would say Mac Jones fits this description, but it's not like with the Jags and Trevor Lawrence, who I want to get to. With them, I'm curious about it working. With Mac, I'm sort of underwhelmed all the time. And who knows, might work out for Mac. He comes back from the injury, it'll be fine. Not a big deal. Hey, had some bad throws, whatever. But all of it collectively is kind of boring. And the thought crossed my mind, but I still think Houston might have to be the answer, even if, because like at least with Chicago with Fields, we're watching every Chicago game with the idea of like, what could Fields be? And I don't even watch the Pats that way with Matt because I think I kind of know.
I think you're right, because I think everyone knows that Fields' ceiling is much higher. Mac is who he is. Mac is Mac. We know what we're going to get from him. I don't know how much higher his ceiling is going to get, you know, at this point in his career.
Yeah, he would have to be just the non-mistake, knows every, has the command, all of those things, because we knew physically like he wasn't even close to some of the other guys that got drafted in the first round. All right, this is a good segue into somebody who physically was very impressive, and that's Trevor Lawrence. It was a mess last year. Urban was there last year. They beat the Chargers. The Chargers felt like they lost anyone who's ever made a Pro Bowl at some point was missing from this game, but this was dominant by Jacksonville. They look different. They feel different. This felt like the coming out party for Trevor Lawrence and the Jags.
Yeah, I think the number one thing is that the Jags are a professional outfit now. Like, they're being coached by adults. Doug Peterson, obviously, you know, Super Bowl coach, Super Bowl winning coach, former quarterback himself. He has Trevor Lawrence looking like the guy that we all expected coming out of Clemson. Like, that rare type of talent that can go out there and take over games. But when you look at the Jags, one thing that really pops out, they got athletes all over the field. And a lot of that has to do with they've been bad for a long time. They've been drafting high for a long time. And now you combine all the talent with real coaching, and these guys look good. Their defense is legit. They got guys that can get after you in their front seven. I think they're one of the leaders in the league as far as interceptions this year. And then Trevor Lawrence has just been playing outstanding football. So people are about to start paying attention to the Jaguars, man, because the Jaguars are a legit team in the AFC this year.
So you talked about Urban. What was it like for you transitioning from Belichick to Steve Mariucci in your first year in Detroit?
Oh, my gosh. Like, I don't even want to put Urban and Steve Mariucci in the same sentence because I think Urban was just a dumpster fire. But I've always talked about, like, when you get good coaching, the bad coaching is even more accentuated. It's like even more apparent. And when I went from New England, it was like going from the mountaintop to the valley low when I went to Detroit. Like, some of the stuff we weren't even going over situational football, things that happen in the game. Those are the type of stuff that determines games. We weren't even going over that stuff. Guys were looking around like, wait a minute, how do we not know what to do in this certain situation? That's the type of stuff I was dealing with in Detroit. And then on top of that, I had the GM, Matt Millen at the time, asking me about what were we doing in New England. And I'm like, you're not paying me enough to be a player and the GM. So it was like that in Detroit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to compare Mariucci to Urban. That's not fair to Mooch at all. And, you know, he had a run in San Francisco on top of everything else. You know, like Urban, right. Urban has nothing like that in the NFL. And I don't know that he's ever going to get a chance to to prove that he could do it. So you're comparing Mariucci to Belichick, which again isn't entirely fair either. But I'm just the wake up call or the difference or just you were you calling guys back in New England being like, man,
I trust me, I had calls with guys that were on the team. I'm like, yo, like, I've never seen anything like this. Like, it is crazy out here. Like, guys wouldn't even show up to practice. Like, it was just crazy. I had never seen anything like it.
Wait, like skipping class or an excused absence? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, guys wouldn't even show up. Like, guys would, like, go out clubbing, and all of a sudden, you're looking around like, where is such and such at? And it just didn't show up to work. It was like, it
Tuesdays?
Was like that going on. No, like actual like Wednesday, like your heavy day, your heavy work day. And you will look around and be like, okay, he didn't show up to work today.
Wait, you guys, I know it's probably different team to team, but is it come in Monday and then Tuesday off? Is that
yeah,
the one?
Like yeah, you come in, right. Yeah, you come yeah. in Monday, watch the film, kind of go over corrections, and then Tuesday's your day off. Wednesday's like your like. That's your heavy day. That's like you come in, that's when you're doing the most. And there were some times where guys wouldn't even show up.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Okay. Moving on. I'm worried about Arizona. I am worried that this is not sustainable. I kind of like watching it, you know, and Kyler, he had a third down throw to the left, or it could have been a fourth down because they convert every fourth down. That's the only way they're even moving the football because they're not doing it on a third down. I know he's another group. Like, we've gone over it here. You start looking around, you're like, man, this team was missing all the receivers. They still have a couple guys that were out there. What is going on? Because I think sometimes it seems to be a collective thing. It depends on if you want to knock Kyler or if you want to just knock Cliff or whatever. Let's talk a little O-line in there. I just don't know how – I know it was a tough schedule. I can't possibly believe film sessions anyone's going, hey, this has been good. Like, this is a good plan. This isn't sustainable. He's going to get killed at some point.
I think when I watch the Cardinals, it's like a beautiful disaster going on. It's a lot of backyard football. A lot of backyard football. It's almost like, hey, Kyler, run around, do what you got to do to go make a play. That is not sustainable in the National Football League. And the offensive line is not protecting. Kyler is running around for his life trying to make plays. And this thing, like, Cliff's got to make this thing happen this year. Like, if Cliff doesn't make this thing happen, considering all the late season meltdowns that's been going on in Arizona, if this thing doesn't get rectified and turn around, I think Cliff is in trouble.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. What's it like blocking for something like this? I don't know that you've ever played with a Kyler. I'm trying to think. Who's the most athletic quarterback you ended up playing? Brady?
I would probably say Jeff Garcia. How about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. He could get out there.
Jeff could run around, but it's a pain in the neck, to be honest with you, because you don't know where he's at. You don't know where he's at in the pocket. And then next thing you know, you get called for holding because he's scrambling around running like a chicken with his head cut off.
I don't know, man. Something has to change. Maybe just getting Hopkins back fixes all of it because it seems to fix it in the past, you know? So they still got a few weeks to go.
Hopkins was there, the last time Hopkins was there, the production was diminishing. So I don't even know if that's the answer.
Yeah. Oh. Did you think Flacco would lead the league in pass attempts through 3 weeks?
No, not at all. You would have thought, like, okay, let's load up on the running game. Let's run the hell out of the ball and limit his attempts. I don't know what the Jets are doing on offense. Like, to have Flacco with that many pass attempts through three games, you're asking for a disaster.
Yeah, obviously it's because they're not very good. I think you always care about the Jets more than you do the Pats, don't you?
I live like literally 10 minutes from the Jets facility. So like I follow them a little bit more than the Bats. And maybe I just like accidents. Maybe I'm attracted to accidents because it seems like every Sunday there's an accident with that organization.
Yeah, well, they're getting Zach Wilson back. We'll see. They've got receivers. I mean, they should be able.
They got weapons.
Wilson's nasty, man.
Oh, absolutely. They got weapons. They got more than enough weapons. We need to see what Wilson is all about, period.
Okay. A couple other quick ones before we let you go. Give me your – did you watch all of Sunday Night Football? I know you. I bet you turned that off.
That was ugly football, bro. 11-10? Come on, man. Pro football and all you could muster was 11-10? Like, that was an ugly game. Denver is just –
What's going on? That's, I think, the most important thing, because the Jimmy part of it is a little reminder of why they went to move on from him in the first place, okay? So, like, right. It's an awesome story. It worked out. He's obviously the kind of guy that was cool with coming in. Not many quarterbacks would have been cool with that whole situation. So it all kind of worked out. That's the theme. That's the story. And then it's like, oh, shit, this is why they wanted to replace him in the first place. The Denver part of it, because they have guys. It's not a roster without talent. And I can't believe that Wilson's been this bad. And I know they got the win and they moved things around. But what are you seeing from a Denver team that, to me, is one of the most disappointing so far in the league?
They have zero identity on offense. I don't know what Denver is. I honestly don't. Like, you got two good backs. You got receivers. You got some really good receivers. My thought would have been, okay, let's run some things that Russell is comfortable with. Like, basically bringing over that Seattle scheme and just kind of implementing some things that you did with the Packers, but make the quarterback comfortable. It doesn't seem like he's on the same page at all with his receivers. There were so many plays where guys were in the wrong spot, Russell bad throw. It's just all discombobulated right now. And Nathaniel Hackett's got to get this thing cleaned up. Like, you got to decide what you want to be on offense, because I don't know what they are right now.
Yeah, I can't believe it's going to be this bad. You know, like, maybe it's, had you ever had a rookie coach before?
Yeah, Rex.
Okay. What do rookie coaches? But see, you guys got off to a good start with Rex, so I don't know if that'll be the same thing. I just remember, I don't know if that's, remember, was it you guys, was it that year with Rex where he just blitzed the shit out of everybody the entire time and it worked for like the first half of the season? And I remember being like on the radio with Van Pelt, right? And I'm going, there's no way this just works. Like the secret was just blitz 40% of the time and it's freaking everybody out. Like there has to be some correction coming to this. And it was like, nah, we're just going to blitz the whole time. That was your team, right?
Yeah, well, the thing was, we were really good on defense. We were like number one in the league in defense and number one in the league in rushing offense. But we had a rookie quarterback. We had Mark Sanchez. He was a rookie. So we had to manage him. And so, like, we just try to protect him, play good defense, run the ball. That was it.
So that's – all right. I'm double-checking this. That's – so what is a rookie – oh, you went 9-7. Okay. But you made it to the conference championship game. That's right. That was one of the two conference championship game appearances with Sanchez. And that's also – are you close? Were you close with Mark? Are you close now?
Yeah, we're still cool.
Was that obvious to you in the building that he wasn't the guy? Or were you surprised he ended up not having a better career?
No, it wasn't obvious. Mark was really talented. You know, the thing was, is like, the organization wanted to make sure that we weren't putting too much on his plate at the time. Like, we didn't want to, mess up his development. So we knew that no one could stop us running the ball and we could play really good defense. And we just stuck by that. Sometimes when you have a defensive head coach, they want to play things closer to the vest than open it up on offense. And I think that's what Rex basically did, was like, we're not going to open this thing up. We're just going to play to our strengths and let's see where it takes us.
Yeah. Cause I think the problem for Sanchez was that, okay, you're the high pick, USC, all the profile. You've got a couple AFC championship game appearances. And the argument that I remember making on the air at the time was like, you can play in the AFC championship game, but it doesn't mean that's who I think you are as a team or as a quarterback. And as it plays out, you kind of keep going back to that, being like, oh, hey, well, we were in the AFC title game and, we were this, we were that, we were all these different things. And then it almost becomes this shield for the quarterback discussion. You understand what I'm saying? Like, when the reality is, if we had a kick go the other way and we lose in the divisional round, are we defending him? Are we pretending that he's somebody different than who he is now? And that's where I think the Sanchez story thing was really interesting, because it felt like the resume was, oh, he's coming along, look what the team is doing. And you're like, yeah, but I don't really know that that's who they are as a team.
But you know what the funny thing was? The funny thing was, he actually played his best ball in the playoffs. He didn't play necessarily, that good in the regular season, but in the playoffs, he played some of his best football, which was very odd to a lot of people in the building at the time. But once, after those two AFC championship games, the team basically, they started breaking the team down. A lot of those guys, were cut, retired, and all those type of things. And then they gave the mantle to Sanchez, but he never really elevated past that point.
Yeah, that clearly was the problem. I mean, the win at New England after what they had just smashed you in the regular season, that's still one of the most ridiculous, short-term turnarounds of two teams looking entirely different. I'll never, ever, ever forget that game, because it was unbelievable. All right, so the Rex thing, I interrupted you, though. What do rookie coaches do? And I don't know if Rex did this because he was a lifer, the father, the brother, So it might have been a little different with Rex. But is there something that rookie coaches do where you go, that rookie coach?
Biggest thing, game management.
It really is that big of a deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that big, game management. Like, you see it with Nathaniel Hackett. He had to hire a coach from Baltimore that was retired because of game management issues. It's just so much on your plate that you got to know how to manage the clock in certain situations in the game. Those guys are rookies. They don't know it. And so that's like the biggest adjustment.
Thanks for the time this week, man. We'll catch up in a couple weeks, and take care of yourself. All right, man.
All right, man. You too.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right. Can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Well, of course, we're going to do some college football. I will tell you, as much as I love Saturdays, there's too many bad slates. There's too many bad slates for people. So I don't know if a 12-team playoff changes that. I've heard it. I don't know. Does it mean teams are going to start playing better out-of-conference games? I'm going to get to the out-of-conference stuff, too, looking at how the Power 5 conferences did against other Power 5s, including a couple additions to my model. I like when people do that. I like when people say, well, my model says, like, what's your model? Division? Like, what? I don't know. So the rankings came out. I'll do my rankings. I'll do my top 12 on Wednesday. We could maybe move that to Monday. I don't know. Maybe that's a better use of time. But I got a lot of shit for putting Oklahoma 11th. They dropped 12 spots in the AP after losing to Kansas State. We'll get to the game in a second. That's not a victory lap. I even felt kind of dumb doing it that way. I'll look at this. I'll try to change mine a little bit more just because I do watch the majority of these games on Saturday. But there's just some Saturdays where you're like, wait, this is on a third TV? Like, this is the best I can do for a third TV game? Okay, so let's start with Clemson and Wake and perhaps the game where we look at Clemson's offense and DJ Uiagalelei and think, okay, this is better. This is what it's supposed to be. Because Wake Forest is good. Sam Hartman is good, the quarterback for Wake. I don't know that I've watched him for 3+ hours straight and just watched that game, because that's kind of what I just really wanted. Hartman has a lot of the throws. He had 6 TDs in this one. He was 20 of 29. But the important thing is Clemson's offense, because if we look back at last season, we were doing some of the preview stuff. Clemson was 103rd on offense when you look at just yards per play, right? Yards per play is a really good indicator of, like, what do you average every time you run a play, right? It takes away pace. It takes away some of these other things. What are you when you were just looking at yards per play? And it's impossible to believe that a program like Clemson could be 103rd. But weird shit happens in sports, right? So now they're 38th. And even if we all could do a better job with this, I know I can. You know, watching college quarterbacks, especially, being like, hey, there's going to be some bad throws in there, man. There's just going to be bad throws. And expecting somebody to be perfect. Like, we watch NFL guys, and there are bad throws all over the place from guys that I still think are really, really good. So to talk about Uiagalelei and say, well, you know, there's still a couple of throws that you'd like to have back. No shit. It's going to keep happening. But it's a major improvement a month in for Clemson's offense compared to where they were. And they do have dudes. Now, Bo Collins, a receiver, I think is he an LA kid or just a California kid? He's a stud. Davis Allen, the tight end, who's like 6'6", 250. He had the touchdown catch. He had another one where he hurdled. Dabo called him best blocking tight end I think he's ever had at Clemson. I'd like to go ahead. He was a 3-star coming out. I'd like to just go ahead now. Second, third round pick, New England Patriots, will be Davis Allen when he comes out. They also have Antonio Williams, the smaller freshman receiver, and then Will Shipley, the sophomore running back, who is standard description here, a little more athletic than you'd think. So Clemson's got NC State as number 10 this week. I think that's the first time NC State's been involved in a top 10 matchup ever. So, you know, can you say Clemson is definitely fourth now? They are fifth in the AP. And fifth in the coaches, because both polls still like Michigan. I'll see. We'll see what I do on Wednesday. K-State, Oklahoma. I did love this game. I love games at Norman. I love Big 12 games at Norman. And I love that Adrian Martinez, the quarterback now for K-State, who had to deal with a ton of shit at Nebraska. And that becomes more and more of a mess after the fact. Like, man, Scott Frost was just really bad at this. And I'm not telling you Adrian Martinez was perfect when he was in Lincoln the whole time. I'm not going to insult Cornhuskers fans that way. But Martinez stepped it up big time. By the way, they just come off a loss against Tulane. So, you know, this isn't you're probably going into this game going like, okay, who is Kansas State? And, you know, they'd lost, they'd scored only 10 points on offense the week before. So the fact that they could hang and punch with an Oklahoma team that's still probably going to be pretty good, but you still are like, wait, Venables is there and the defense couldn't stop Kansas State? Like, that seems to be going against the plan. 41 points to the Wildcats in this one. So a couple different things. By the way, Deuce Vaughn, the miniature running back for Kansas State, is one of the absolute must-watch players in all of college football. And Knowles, their big receiver, and the white tight end. So Kansas State's actually got some offensive options there. And Martinez just had one of those nights. Like, it was a night you felt like a kid that has struggled for such a long time, transfers in, and has that night in Norman. And now Kansas State's beaten Oklahoma three of the last four. So I was happy for him, and I was kind of happy for K-State there. But what does that mean for the Big 12? Because if we start doing the playoff shuffling here, and I get to this a little bit more on some of the non-conference stuff that we're going to talk about. Baylor's got the loss at BYU. Texas has got two losses now. The Bama loss that made people like Texas. The Texas Tech blown lead where it was against Tech's backup quarterback. Iowa State's got their loss in there. Oklahoma State's still alive. But when you start thinking about the playoff part of this, this isn't a great start for the Big 12 unless you want to talk about Kansas, who is number two on third down conversions in college football at 68%. Yes, Kansas should be ranked. Is it the outrageous act of violence that people are... They were 26th in voting, so they had the most others receiving votes. Yes, it's kind of bullshit bias because Kansas sucked for such a long time. And when you look at who Kansas has beat, like, it's actually a little bit more impressive than I think people would realize. Like, you beat West Virginia, who I actually think is like a good football team. They beat Houston. They beat Duke. But still, for Kansas to be scoring like this and putting up these kinds of points, they should have been ranked. But they just, the rest of their schedule, though, man. Like, this is, we'll see how this all plays out. But they should have been ranked. Arkansas at A&M. One of the weirder games you're ever going to see. Arkansas ends up losing by kicking the top of the upright. The field goal, game-winning field goal by their kicker, hit the absolute top of the upright. It looked like it was all Arkansas. You were going to start having some weird Jimbo Fisher conversations this week locally, even though it doesn't mean anything because his contract on top of the extension, which kind of like when Jimbo got that huge number, which he deserved, national championship, they wanted to pay him. A&M was sick of screwing around in the SEC West. And then as soon as you flirt with any kind of success, it's like, hey, let's just load up even more guaranteed money that we would have to buy out in case we decide to go the other way with this, is what boosters do all the time. So Arkansas is up 14-0. It's 14-7. KJ Jefferson for Arkansas. I saw David Pollock after game day saying, like, look, he likes Jefferson, doesn't love him. I completely agree. I think he's dynamic in certain aspects. But when Sanders, their running back, had been running like he had the first 3 weeks and A&M did a better job containing him, It's a little different offense, and I thought they contained him a little bit more. And this reaching over, like KJ, that fumble was a monumental fumble that changed the entire game. He's reaching in. He jumps towards the goal line when he's way too far away, goes to reach. There's no way it's going to work. You still have downs, I believe, on that play to do this. I think there's a lot of fumbles at the goal line now because guys are getting a little selfish with it. If it's third or fourth, okay. When it's first, and I got to better double check that to make sure what that was as far as downs, because I think it was pretty early in the downs for them when they did it. Changes the game. Now, for Arkansas, whatever, I wouldn't worry about it that much. I mentioned how Rocket Sanders for Arkansas is my favorite running back. A-Chain for A&M, this was one of the few times where it felt like a running back was winning the football game for his team, at least on offense. He had 159. He was awesome. They lost Smith for the season in a pileup, which sucks because he was probably the other best offensive player for A&M. So that's a huge loss for them. Now, A&M were sitting here going, all right, off the Miami win, you felt better. They got ranked, which pissed some people off, especially once you realize Miami stinks again. My God, Miami. And, you know, I guess it's just, hey, trying to survive in the SEC West, and A&M's now ranked 17th with this. It's just a weird game. You look at the field goal and all that kind of stuff. 23 total completions in this game. So, you know, by the way, yeah, that was first and goal for Arkansas at A&M's 3-yard line when Jefferson had the fumble. Okay, last thought here. Stat you can use to meet people. Minnesota is 79% on third downs, 41 of 52. Have fun with all your new friends. Before you get too excited, hopefully you're still listening to the podcast, so you didn't turn it on to just start introducing yourself with that insane Gopher stat. Real quick, because I told you I was going to do this, I went through it last night and wanted to look at the Power Five against the other Power Five, and I included three other teams. I included Cincinnati, I included BYU, and I included Notre Dame. And I just think you should, because I think you should give credit for the conferences that, you know, Cincinnati's coming off a playoff appearance here. We can debate who Cincinnati is now, but it just felt wrong to not include that into the positive total, because you wanted to see, you know, which conferences are scheduling which. Because whenever an FCS opponent pops up, people kind of lose their shit when a lot of times they'll be like, wait, your conference doesn't play any FCS guys? So let's take a look at Power 5 against Power 5, including Cincinnati, Notre Dame, and BYU. The SEC went 8-4 in these games, so they scheduled 12 of them. The Big Ten's gone 5-7 in those games. The ACC had 13 of these games, and they went 6-7. A Pac-12, less teams, understandable for them in the Big 12. They've gone 2-6. Wins for Wazoo at Wisconsin, Washington pounding Michigan State, which now another week later, after we saw what Minnesota did, I'm like, wait, maybe Michigan State. Maybe they are not him, he or him. And then the Big 12, we've got a 6-4 tally. Now, not all of those records are created equal. If you really dig through it, you're like, eh, I don't know. You kind of beefed up on some of these programs that are a mess right now. But those are the numbers, and those will be something that factor into how the committee looks at. They can say they don't look at the conferences. I'll never believe that. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Seven-time world champion and modern-day legend Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. Hosted by Kevin Hart, Tom Brady gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night when everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life Advice, the email for submissions, lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. We have a guest on Wednesday. I think we're taping with McShay, and we're also taping with Paige Spiranak, who is going to talk with us for a little bit, and then she's also going to answer your questions. So, I don't know. Just, I guess we can ask her dating questions, advice for guys, advice for dudes on that. Maybe if you want to be an influencer, she could answer some questions. Maybe you're older and you have a daughter who would like to start a YouTube channel or something like that. She could be a valuable resource on that as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I know Kyle's looking forward to the emails. And there you go. So just put Paige in the title of the email so that we can filter them that way and know that we'll read them specifically and go through them for Paige joining us this week. All right. Does that all make sense?
Golf ones or no?
Yeah, tons of golf. But
yeah,
I don't.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you're right.
That's kind of her thing too, you know.
Yeah, no, I guess I just didn't know, like, hey, I'm having a real hard time around the greens, you know, like, although Van Pelt taught me, he's like, just make sure your follow through on the chipping is 100%, like, bring the club back to whatever distance
that is accurate
you need, but make sure your follow through is a true follow through. And once he taught me that, dude, I'm telling you, one round with Van Pelt, if I golfed, would have shaved multiple strokes Like he was like, oh, you're doing this on your drive. Fixed it. Hey, you're chipping. Do this. And then he was like, make sure you try to do this. It was unbelievable. I was like, you're fucking awesome at this. He's like, well, I've watched a lot of golf.
That's true.
And it is true. The guy has watched a lot of golf. So there you go. Golf question. I guess I just thought the golf ones would be, but whatever. Throw them in the mix. I actually like the idea of having a few golf ones in there.
No, those are probably the least interesting ones, but you know, we want to cover all the things that she does.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Before we do any of this, actually, it's just, as I look at the Zoom, Saruti hinted at it. Now, but I don't want to do this to Kyle because we've decided.
No, he did it to himself.
He's got a mustache, a little pirate thing going on?
It's kind of like an Antonio Banderas situation, yeah.
Well, that's kind. That's pretty kind of you. I don't have that much experience with like the thing where like a woman like has to cut her hair. I've seen it in movies and I saw it up close with my mom. So I think this was my version of that. Like every once in a while, mom would be like, I don't know, I just got to cut my hair. She cuts all of her hair off and, you know, I got to be honest, didn't always look the best. But she knew that was coming and she would do it anyway. And I kind of knew this was coming and I did it anyway. I was like holding my, you know what it was? It was that stupid State Farm commercial where that guy is like talking to Jake from State Farm and he's like, sometimes I like to smell my beard. And it was like, obviously he's got a glorious beard, probably fake, but he's like, I started thinking like, oh, that's kind of like gross. Like he's like talking about smelling it after a meal. I'm like, I don't know. Is this?
It's a little gross.
I would like touch it.
It's not stupid State Farm. We love State Farm.
No. I just meant, God damn it. So I just was starting to feel it.
How flustered are you right now? Wait, are you mad at us right now about the mustache?
Guys, if I feel like this is still, could I even be doing this? Because I'm basically ready for one of these a week at this point.
Oh, now we're talking.
Would I even be mad? But basically, I did it. I did it. I felt stupid immediately, thought I wasn't going to have to see anyone. And then I was like, oh shit, I've got to see Bill because I'm going to Ben's game the next day. I saw Bill raise his eyebrows a little bit when he picked me up from Frolic Room. And he was just like, he didn't say anything. I'll give him credit. Unlike you two. He just looked at me and was like, yo, what's up? And we didn't address it. So I was like, I figure if I could wait another couple days, I'll be back to a point where nobody would say anything. But
are you being held hostage? Like you don't have to have a mustache, well, right? Like why you're like, oh, I hope you guys weren't seeing it. But like you could have just shaved it before we started.
I don't know because I didn't like, I had a better feeling in my head of what my face looked like under all the hair. It's a patchy beard at best, but like I just figured that, you know, under it would Brave be Warriors. A little bit better, but it wasn't. So I was like, you know what? The last thing I was going to take off was this. And the fiance says she likes this weird look. And I was like, good, you're going to get about 3 more days of it. And then I'll be back to normal. But I'm glad we got this out of the way. And hopefully nobody uses this Zoom video for anything.
So this is like your Jimmy Butler new haircut showing up at like Heat Media Day. You're just like fucking with, you just want to see what people's reactions are. Because that's kind of what it feels like.
I did it Thursday morning because I knew I wasn't going to have to see you guys. And I forgot about the Friday thing that we had life advice and stuff. So it's like, all right, Thursday, it's the end of the week. Because that used to be the end of my week with you guys. I used to not have to see you guys on Friday mornings because we were Thursdays. So I got all jumbled up in my schedule. And I did it Thursday morning. I was like, all right, that's enough time for hair to grow until Monday. And then I was like, oh, fuck, I got life advice. Oh, fuck, I got to go to Bill's thing with Ben. And I just saw way more people than I thought. I was going to be a hermit, basically, for a couple of days. I was watching Titus's dog. I was like, oh, we'll shut in the house. And then it just all went to shit. And now it's out and about. And it's Monday and it's not back yet. So I guess I overestimated what kind of hair was coming out of my face.
Okay, back up. We got a few things to address here. So you were doing the show up until this point, hidden behind the microphone, hiding the mustache from us on the Zoom.
Friday, yeah, just for Friday.
But kind of just now also.
Yeah, well, I didn't know he was going to be addressed.
All right. And then you said Bill picked you up from the Frolic Room?
Yeah, because I was going to Ben's game.
Oh, okay.
But I was gonna hide, and then I was like, oh, you guys already saw me. So I was like, I guess I can go to Frolic Room. Got a real nice taste of healthy jokes from those fellas down there. So, you know, it's all falling apart, and now we're doing this here.
So basically, you did something that you don't like, that people are giving you shit about, that you want to hide from, that can be fixed in 5 minutes, and you don't want to.
No, I can't fix it with this. I can't fix it with this. I think my face looks crazy.
Off.
No. I think this is the one redeeming quality I've got right now.
I'm going to say, I think it looks pretty good.
But you also said something else like, oh, with you guys, like it sounds like somebody sat down and put his truth t-shirt on and there's some lingering resentment on this show that has not been worked out yet. Like, I don't even think this is about the mustache anymore. I think it's about the dynamic. and it seems like you're still pissed post Big Cat.
Well, the good news is it's a long season for us to work all this out. It's only week three.
Yeah, but I thought we were on this. I thought the coordinator and quarterback were on the same page here, and clearly we're not seeing the same. The safeties, we don't see the same thing.
Yeah, guys get hurt. You know, you come back. It's okay.
I don't feel good about any of this. Okay, let's actually get to a question here. Am I the asshole again? Please admit name. Whatever, Dave. Stats 23, 6'1", 185. Pretty handsome. Makes six figures 1 year out of college. Well, sounds like somebody's not lacking confidence either. Add that to the resume.
You might be the asshole.
I love that.
You might be the asshole already.
Look, if a guy knows he's good looking, he knows he's good looking.
I get it.
No, I'm not talking to you, Kyle. Like, I mean, you've looked better, but
why are you already get me with the soft jab? You don't get another one midway.
I don't think I soft jabbed you before that. That was a healthy liver shot.
That was
okay.
A Hadouken.
Here we go. I was on the back end of a 4-mile run the other day, clearly punching the clock and working hard. I live in a town that has a pretty unique view of New York City's skyline. Hoboken?
Hobo, I was going to say Jersey City.
Somewhere in New Jersey. I was in the zone and someone was approaching me on a bike. I take a half glance at the guy who's probably in his 40s. Fucking guy. Some guy in his 40s, bro. Guy sucks. Probably wasn't pulling down six figures 1 year out of school like this 23-year-old handsome motherfucker. All right. Instead of stopping, I continue. Wait. Sorry. So I take a half glance at the guy who's probably in his 40s. And as we were passing each other, he abruptly asked, "Can you take my photo?" I naturally look back at him as it takes a moment to process what he said. Instead of stopping, I continue on, pretending not to hear him. And as I'm running away, I hear a, "What did you say?" I didn't say anything. I just kept it moving. He didn't even say anything. The guy asked, taking the photo, said, "What did you say?" Am I in the wrong? I wasn't interested in breaking stride. I could care less if the guy got a nice sunset New York City bike picture. What would you guys have done differently? Nothing.
No. Yeah.
Nothing.
You got to, when you're looking for someone to take your picture, you have to find someone who's not busy or at least is just kind of like lingering around, not someone who's mid run. He deserves it.
You know what else you also can't do is be a guy by yourself asking another guy doing something if he wants to take your fucking picture. That's all time code break right there. Shout out to Chris Long.
Guys helping dudes, you know?
No, that's out of bounds.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That's fair. I think that's the only time. I mean, you know, I drink on Hollywood Boulevard. I mean, off Hollywood. I'm not like on Hollywood. You know what I mean? You get it. It's Frolic
not
Room.
Not walking
Check
around.
It out. Check it out, Frolic Room. So I'm there often. And so there's people like rarely speaking English too. Like, and they're like, "What do you want? Do you want directions?" And they hand me the phone. And I'm like, well, I mean, if they're like Swedish, is that
no,
racist?
I'm just
I mean,
be careful.
Yeah. I'm just saying, mostly I think they're like wanting directions and they're handing a phone to me. And I'm like, "Do you want me to look up your Uber thing? What do you want?" And then there's the camera. Okay, do it. And I hate that, but I don't not do it. If it was a guy, I've always wanted to not do it. That's a situation where I wouldn't even stop. I wouldn't say anything. I would just be like, "Yeah, this feels good. I've been waiting to deny somebody a picture. And this is the time when I think it's absolutely okay."
I would never, ever go up to dude in his 20s who was actually doing something. First of all, he could be doing nothing forever and then be like, "Hey, you mind? I want to get a picture of me in front of this lifeguard chair at the beach." And then just me, and I smile and pose. Now, I do it when I go to tourist things by myself so that I can bring them to Sarah and Carissa so they can laugh at how absurd the pictures are of me by myself waving in front of a helicopter as I'm about to go on a helicopter tour of Maui. Or like when I went to Seattle and I decided to go on a little boat thing through, I guess, the Sound. And the lady was like, "All right, pictures." And then she tried to sort of wave me through because I was by myself. And I was like, "No, I actually want mine taken in front of this life preserver." And I waved. And it was, I made it horrible on purpose. And then I shared it with my, you know, two female friends. Yeah, it's content. It's content. They're epic fucking pictures. I couldn't look more awkward or terrible in all of them. Anyway, the point is, I would never go. I just can't fathom being a 40-year-old guy asking a 20-year-old dude who, again, here is doing something to be like, "Take my picture." You know, like, I think the guy in the bike that asked that, like, that guy's problems, real problems.
Yeah. Get a selfie stick, bro. It's going to be a long life of asking people for pictures who are going to say no.
Well, that's so. What I was going to ask you. What do guys like? Because you go to like expensive gyms, and I'm sure there are dudes taking pictures all the time of themselves, like trying to be Instagram famous. What's the? Do they? They don't ask other guys, right? Do they have like a tripod set up? Do they?
Yeah.
Just mirror selfies.
Yeah, guys will have. The tripod thing. I mean, if you get a, I feel like. My experience has been male female lifters deadlift. It's more abused by female deadlifters than male deadlifters. I don't know if that's scientific or not, but I think the cool thing is that, you know, look, I mean, science is the science, but you know, women can deadlift a lot. So I think that's why there's so many women that love deadlifting. And not saying that every woman that loves a deadlift wants to fucking do a 30 for 30 on it, but I've seen some hardcore abuse of a squat rack situation because you're trying to get the shot right and you're taking forever in between deadlifts. And then there's like a point of no return where it's like after a certain amount of minutes, multiple minutes, where you're like, now you're sort of ruining any momentum that you have. Again, you know, maybe people would argue something different, but then again,
lift.
Yeah,
point.
Right. But that's specific to that. Men on all other occasions suck way more in the gym than women do. I would say the only thing women abuse more than men, because men are worse in probably every other category of the gym, would be the deadlift scenario. So I made it more about deadlifts than I did about just gym stuff. But yeah, I've seen those
people are pretty
bendable.
Shameless with the tripods nowadays. I mean, everywhere, out and about.
Equinox here isn't that bad. It really isn't that bad. It's become really, really busy though. And there was a new girl in the gym. I'll admit it. Guys on Friday were like, what the fuck is going on here? And so dudes started like working. They were out of their normal station routine, which is always a tell. Like, oh, you're over.
It wasn't leg day, but they were by the squat rack.
Yeah. Or like, oh, he's stretching a little bit longer today. Like, I never stretches. But yeah, no one knew who she was. A couple of long-term guys kind of eyeing each other being like, fuck's going on here today? And that was it. Nobody talked to her.
It's shocking. Yeah.
Yeah. You just keep it moving. We covered a lot in that one. All right. So let's do this one. What's up, guys? We're not going to say where he lives. He gave us the full list. He even put his name in here. I don't think he cares, but 25 or 24 years old. Oh, we say 25, throw him off. 6 feet, 185, bench, 285, squat, 385, deadlift, 415. Training for a second marathon. All right. So this guy's really into it. He should work out with the other guy. That guy loves running. I'm a student in a physical therapy school. I have a wife and a 2-year-old son. And although my wife makes good money, I feel like I should be doing whatever I can to contribute financially. I've been driving Uber whenever I have free time, but it's boring as shit and makes my ass hurt. Two negatives. I've always wanted a bartend. Just seems like a lot of fun to me. My wife doesn't want me to, though, because she doesn't want girls in a bar hitting on me late at night after having a few too many to drink. I may just have to alpha her and do it anyway, though.
Sounds like a great idea.
Ooh. Yeah, that always yeah. works. All the married guys chiming in and be like, yeah, why don't I alpha more? I know you've bartended in the past, so I just want to see what you thought about it. Is it fun? Can you make good money? Can you watch the games and bartend at the same time? Are the ladies hitting on you all the time? Any perspective or advice would be greatly appreciated. Y'all are the best. All right. Well, first of all, I think this is a terrible idea. Okay. And I'll start with that part of it and then I'll get to the rest of it. It's a bad idea because she doesn't want you to do it. So like, it's cool to bring in a little extra cash, and it's definitely one of the cooler jobs you can have. It's a cool job. I fucking loved it. All right. And then I hated it. So whatever. Some people can make a long run of it, and that's great. I think there's a social aspect to it where people that bartend for a really long time kind of love that. You know, it's just kind of not to turn it into cheers, but, you know, to turn it into a career, I think there's some real social parts of it where the person who becomes a bartender, they enjoy it. You know, they just part of that dynamic. And honestly, I can appreciate that, right? But if she doesn't want you to do it and then you just do it, you're going to be dealing with her giving you a hard time about this all the time. Now, as far as like, what can you do or not do? It depends entirely on the bar. If you work at a dive bar that's not busy all the time, you watch a ton of fucking games. I've done that. I worked at a dive bar one summer where I opened up at like 8. I'd cut fruit that I knew was going to rot. I'd play pool and listen to 311 from like 8 until 11 o'clock. And then I didn't drink when I bartended ever at the normal places, but this place was so dead all the time in the summer that I may pour a little Cape Codder for your boy, knowing that I was just pre-gaming to go out because I was going to close early because no one ever fucking showed up. Ever. No one ever showed up. It just was off the grid during the summer. So the owner would call and be like, how is it tonight? I'd be like, no one's showing up to this place, man. Like, there's no, nobody's coming to town. They'd be like, all right, one bell. That was code for one bell, 1 a.m. I would be out of there at 1:01 because it wasn't hard to clean up when nobody was in there. It was very weird. Just this place didn't do well during the summer. And I did that, I think, every night for 2 months. Didn't make a ton of money that summer. I know that's shocking. I think I made 10 bucks for my shift. And that 10 bucks was super important. But that was it. That was it. So yeah, I could watch a ton of games there and nobody hit on me. Nobody ever hit on me because there was never anyone there. Some of the prime years, sure, you're going to get hit on. It's cool to be a bartender. All right. You're in your 20s. Yeah, you're 24. You're probably, it depends on what the vibe is at 24. You know, you shouldn't work at a college bar because 24, you're still young enough where they may not figure it out entirely. And there's other places where nobody's going to hit on you. You know, it could be a little bit more upscale. It could be a little bit more professional. I worked at a place towards the end when I was in Boston. It was the last place I ever bartended. And I bartended with Boston Rob from Survivor. And then this other guy that was like the hottest guy in Boston. I'm not afraid to say that. Hot Dan. He was a really good looking dude. Great guy too. Salt of the earth.
You called him Hot Dan?
Yeah, right to his face. He was that hot. No one ever hit on me that. And that this is a bar I should have been hit on. No one ever did. Now, if you looked at my 10-year chart at that point, we were dipping into some all-time lows. Confidence was low. Market cap numbers, yeah. I had none.
Numbers were low. Yeah, you weren't even in that phase yet.
Lift numbers were about to explode, though. They were about to explode.
Control what you can control, right?
I was about a year removed from the failed engagement, which really, you know, it was good that it didn't work out. But I could use that as fuel, but also fuel for revenge and also being bummed out. Because I was like, cool, something else I can be bummed out about. And I'll just use this as an excuse to be even more bummed out. That's what I'll do. So, yeah, the all-time ride chart, if you expanded it out 10 years, because at that point, probably charting me for, you know, 26, 27 years, that was, we were hitting some epic lows. So when you're bartending in a place like that, and the thing is, when I bartend with the females that were all smokes, nobody wanted to order from me, or I had to do like all the bullshit stuff because they were like flirting and getting us bigger tips and all that kind of stuff. So I was not at my best. The hair was starting to fall out a little bit too. I was making about 25 large on the year.
So if this was like bartender stock game, this was when you wanted to get on the Russillo stock.
Yeah, I knew it was all going to work out. I was plotting and thinking and just conceiving. But, you know, I don't think my car was registered. You know, it was like one of those deals where you're like, oh yeah, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to get it. You got to do that. I thought I did that last year. Oh, that's this year. You know, one of those deals. So here's the other little hitch in your plan. Any place that's any good isn't going to want to just train you if you've never done this
Take
before.
A chance on this guy. I like his moxie.
So probably could have started with that. He's saved hot, save everybody a lot of time. No, that was the other guy was hot.
Maybe he's hot. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It really comes down to this. Are you hot? If you're so hot that you're going to get a job with no experience whatsoever, then yes, you will be hit on. And yes, you may even put yourself in a comp. Are you a flirt? Do you like the attention? Do you like it? Because the cocktail waitresses like bartenders because we are not the creeps. We are on the other side of the wood structure, right? They confide in us. We protect. We help them out when the night's going. And then guess what? They end up liking you a lot more than the patrons, a lot of times, some would say, scholars would argue. So you got to know you're like, if you were locked in, you're not a flirt. You're not like that at all. Like, that's the part where the wife, the significant other, it's like, okay, you may think on paper you don't have these thoughts or you would never do this or you're not one of those guys. But now you are putting yourself in a position where you are going to have some temptation. And that's really what she's telling you not to do. So the fact that you, with no experience, unless, again, you're hotter than Hot Dan from Boston, wait. Was Dan his name?
Uh-oh.
Because there was another guy who wasn't as hot that may have been named Dan.
Maybe that's why you call them Hot Dan, where they're two Dans.
That would make a lot of sense.
Hot Dan and not Hot Dan.
The other guy has to be Daniel.
Yeah, the hot guy I'm thinking about was like, but he was like rough. He was really rough around the edges. And he, I think he might have been an electrician during the day too. He was like tough. I was pretty jealous of him. Yeah, no, I had a poster of him for like 2 years, but I didn't. I took it down when I moved. Anybody else? Anything else here?
Yeah, I mean, it's super hard to be a bartender. I think I was my dream for years. I couldn't ever crack it. I would even work as a dishwasher and then like an expo guy. I was a busboy. I was like, can I please just be a bartender? I was like, I'll even try to go waiter just to jump to bartender, but I couldn't crack the waiter list either. So that's hard. That's just hard.
It's hard.
It was really a catch 22. You need experience, but you can't get experience if you won't get. It's like it's one of those things. It's like, I guess I'll just never be a bartender. So, I mean, that's not super easy. So unless you have like an uncle who's like, will give you a job as a bartender or something, I don't know how you're going to do it. So I guess what I mean is that's hard. And then two, like if you did pull this off somehow, like your wife, you're going to come home from work and you're going to be, I already know when I come home from a long day, when it's like an extra long day and it's like, I had to drive somewhere for work, whatever, I come back, I'll be like, you know, I just want a little bit of sympathy. Like, she'd be like, you know, I had a rough day at work. She's not going to look at it like you came from home from work, because she's looking at it like you want to do this to have fun. So you're going to be like, you're going to come home at like 3 a.m. and she's going to have time to argue with you if you're a night shift guy. Like, and you're going to be like, I just got off work. And she's not going to look at you like that. She's going to be like, yeah, you were just having fun playing with your friends that you're getting paid to do. Like, she's not going to look at it the way you do if you did somehow pull this off. So I don't know. Find something else that makes you feel cool if you want to pick up a second job.
You get in a bed and she's like, is that perfume? And you're like, it's just black cherry.
Yeah, exactly. And you're a service. Like, there's going to be nights where people are just going to be assholes to you. I mean, you kind of hold the keys of the castle being the guy behind the bar, but you are in a service. The nature of that business is service. So, you know, you might come home just not feeling great. And then she's already not feeling great. And she doesn't care that you're not feeling great because she thinks you're at a fucking play date for 7 hours. So I just think...
Wow.
I just think that you would get home thinking a different attitude about how you went out and got some extra money for the family, and she's just like, fucking asshole. Wow. So I think it would, even if it did really work good out, it wouldn't work out.
Yeah, I knew from early age I could never be a barstool or a bartender. I just don't have the attention span. I'm not that I don't want to chat with people for no reason. I'm not a good small talk guy. So I don't know. This guy seems like he really wants to do it, but like, I don't know what else. So the Uber thing's not working out for him. I get it. I would probably be bored too if I was driving around. But like, what can he do then? Because he wants the extra money. I don't know. Like he just wants to watch games. Like, I don't know what else he could kind of do in this situation. Because the other question is like, where's your entry level bartender job? Is that like Chili's? Like, where do you get an entry level bartender?
Those are tough. No, that's like all corporate. It's all vetted out.
It's like 5 years experience.
No, those are harder to get.
Yeah. So where do you go?
Maybe be a waiter. Can that be a happy medium?
Waiter seems like it'd be a tough job. I don't know. I'd rather be a bartender than a waiter.
Me too.
Most everybody would rather be a bartender. Don't email the show. the pro waiter. Big waiters. We don't need that email explaining it. Kyle, would you, if the Frolic Room offered you 3 shifts a week right now, would you give all of this up?
All of this up? No. Definitely not. And those guys, I
mean, 2 years ago,
Pantages right there. Maybe. Yeah. Like I said, a couple of those things, my life advice would be different if you asked me 2-3 years ago. I had way less to lose. But I mean, some of those guys, Pantages is attached, and sometimes just 10 people roll in from like the desert 90 minutes away that have like a show package. And so it's like Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays, and they just roll in and they
What the fuck are you talking about right now?
Pantages is the theater right there. It's like attached to it. So there's a off-Broadway show sort of deal that's happening a couple times a week. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I'm sitting there. All of a sudden, just it gets packed with like some 70, 60, 70 year old groups. And turns out they don't always tip super well. They all have like these weird drinks they're asking for. And some of them come in, it's their first time, they're asking for drink menus. We all have a big laugh about that. But it's like, yeah, we need a couple Tom Collins. And do you guys have an old fashioned? And can you make a neat? It's just like, these guys are like used to pouring, you know, drinks from their two taps and, you know, getting some bottles and, you know, some well mixers. Guys, they're freaking out, and then they get like no tip, and then they come back at intermission. And sometimes those guys aren't having a great time. I mean, the bartenders, and they're just like, God damn it.
So wait. This changes everything. So if you're bartending at the Frolic Room, it's just you're pouring a couple of Michelobes. You guys are handing out cigarettes to each other. Go outside.
Yeah.
And then you get a complete like knife. You get shanked with the responsibility of at the intermission of a show, you have to go over to that lobby to do like the theater lobby.
No,
bar.
That lobby comes in. There is no lobby.
They actually come
there.
Into the Frolic.
They walk outside and into the Frolic Room because it used to be attached, and now they're two different places. So it's like all this history, and now it just they floods in. There's 10 people. There's like 10 couples. The dudes are all massive, wearing Hawaiian shirts. Ladies are wearing their. It's just there's like, wow, this is a different crowd, and they're all like the same in the same 10-year age range. And
they must complain all the time too, right? Because if they don't have the right Pinot, and you're just like, hey, yeah, it's not really what this is.
It's like this, and you'll ask for a drink menu again. It's like you're so old, you forgot. And it's 2 hours ago when we told you don't have a drink menu. It's just, and that's when I see those bartenders aren't having a great time, and then they leave, and there's like four singles on the counter for 10 people that just had like two drinks each. It's like, wow, this is just a different type of crowd. So I would. Long story short, I wouldn't want to do that now. I see sometimes they have tough days out there at the Frolic. So I wouldn't give this up for that.
Yeah. Thoughts and prayers.
I'd work a weekend shift once just to see.
Yeah, I've thought about picking up a shift somewhere local. Yeah.
Reach out to us,
same
guys.
Bucket. Yeah.
No, I'll get my surf safe.
Like my one night of not watching NBA, which I've told myself this year I'm going to do, where there's just one night you're not allowed to watch it. It has to be one night you're not allowed to watch the NBA. If it's such a big deal with that night, then just tape the game and watch it in the morning. I can't do what I did again. And I was like, maybe I should just bartend one night. And it's like, you're really going to do that?
Yes.
I think it's more of a joke in my head.
Maybe that's an idea for a YouTube show. Because now, like, you know, you have Eli Manning dressing up and going to Penn State practice. I feel like that's like a hot thing now. Like, maybe we have you two go in disguise at the Frolic Room or at some bar. And this could be like a new Ringer YouTube channel thing where famous people just become bartenders for a night and see how it goes.
Yeah, but you'd have to have some bartending experience for it to go anything above awful. And considering it's been this long, and when you don't know the prices and you don't know where shit is, even if you knew how to bartend, when you don't know behind the bar, you're going to suck, even if you actually still remember how to do stuff. So, all right, there you go.
Any LA bars, reach out. Let me know. I'm receptive.
Kyle would pick up a shift is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, right, we don't have to videotape it or anything. Player. That's fine.
You know what might be a good internet show or an Instagram show based on all the videos that I see that suck is if you took a video of a 40-year-old guy asking 20-year-old guys in activities to take pictures and then ask for more pictures, ask for different angles, and then see how long you could go asking the guy to keep taking pictures before he's like, dude, here's your camera back. Here's your phone back. I don't want to do this anymore. All right, there you go. That's probably already been done. It's not that original. Okay.
Ashton Kutcher did something like that, yeah.
Yeah, workshop that one out. All right, thank you to Saruti. Thank you to Kyle. Thank you to any bartender that's got an easy POS system that maybe the nephew could learn here.
Wednesdays are my days.
Wednesdays. He's looking at a Wednesday shift. He doesn't want to watch games, though. Not like our emailer. Again, Paige will join us on Wednesday. Email lifeadvicerr@gmail.com for some specific stuff to her. Golf, fitness, I guess relationships. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Excited about the rest of the week, too, with McShay and a couple of things we have on Friday. So please subscribe. Ryan Russell Podcast, Ranger Spotify.